The Suns are led, of course, by the great Steve Nash, who continues to be one of the most entertaining players in the league to watch. And Amari Stoudemire, who is a major force inside. I thought it was interesting. Bruce Bowen was talking about how he doesn't know how effective Stoudemire would be without Nash.
Right.
That he thinks that Stoudemire, so much of his game stems from what Nash creates for him. Either way, when they're together, they're awfully good.
They are.
And then there's Grant Hill. Good for Grant Hill, who's been one of the really good guys in sports for a long time. He sat in that chair, Mike, and hosted this show with me one day last year when you were off. And he's such an interesting person and such a good guy and such a good player for such a long time. And it's kind of hard to believe, but here's the situation. Last night, Grant Hill won a playoff series for the first time in his NBA career.
Yeah, there were two guys in this series who were 1-2 as far as career regular season games with active players to never win a playoff series. It was Grant Hill at 868 games, and for Portland, it was Andre Miller, 897 games. So the two of them, one of them was going to get off the schneid here, and it was Grant Hill. You know, and again, you just think about this guy's career and the promise that it had, and then the injuries that just derailed him. You never thought he was going to make a comeback to it, certainly not get back to what everybody thought he was going to be. And, boy, there's been a bit of a resurgence. Had a couple of monster blocks around the rim last night, and now finally gets that – gets the monkey off his back at about 50 years old. I mean, it's a long time coming, but it finally happened.
Yeah, he feels that way. I mean, he's a product of an era gone by. I mean, you think back to the teams that he played on in college and everything. Think how long ago that seems like, and here he is, and he's still playing pretty well.
Yeah, he is.
He's a pretty good player. He's still a very good player. He is a fairly durable guy. He's actually only missed one game in the last 2 years after all those years of injury, so good for him. Grant Hill going on to the second round.
You know, I'm just happy, man. You know, really it's more for the guys on the team. You know, Amari and Steve done a great job. The young guys getting some playoff experience. You know, I'm done worrying about my legacy. It's trying to get the Stoudemire's legacy going, and hopefully we're not done. Hopefully we can go on the second round and do well.
Should be an interesting series. I'm looking forward to seeing Phoenix and San Antonio. I really wanted to see Phoenix and Dallas.
Yeah.
I think that would have been, you know, look, San Antonio is just the team no one wants to watch.
It really is.
It's a shame. I don't mean that disrespectfully, but if you were getting set to now watch Phoenix play Dallas, think how excited you'd be.
I completely agree with the two types of style those teams have, and then you throw in San Antonio and everybody just seems to be bored with it, yet, you know, go ahead, as I'm sure they say, we'll be bored with the rings weighing down on our hands and our fingers. You know, we're fine with that, but that's just the perception, and which is seems to have become the reality around the country.
So that's your situation from last night, two closeout games, and closed out they were. You have three closeout games on the schedule for tonight. You've got the Lakers, the Jazz, and the Bucks all looking for closeout wins. Milwaukee playing game six at home against Grant Hill on the line. That's Grant Hill on the phone right now. Okay. I'm being told Grant Hill is on the phone right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. If Grant Hill just called in, we're going to put him on the phone.
He was a co-host here. He has the free
reign. That's true. Grant Hill, congratulations. How are you?
Thanks, guys. Hey, I was just we just got back from Portland, and I'm driving home from the airport, and I turned you guys on, and I just wanted to say I'm 37, not 50.
You see that, Golic? See, if you knew Grant Hill was listening to every word you said, you wouldn't be so sneaky.
You go for a little joke and you don't realize the guy you're joking on is listening. Well, hey, congratulations. I mean, as I just said, 868 regular season games and you finally get a postseason victory. I mean, boy, talk about the monkey off your back a little late in your career, but it's still got to feel pretty good, huh?
You know, it feels great. It feels great. And, you know, we've had a great year. Guys on the team have been wonderful, and yes, it is good to kind of get that monkey off my back, and you know, I'm just excited, and you know, it doesn't get any easier against the Spurs in the next round, but we'll certainly be ready.
Mike and Mike Grant Hill calling in here. I've just landed back from Portland again after winning the first postseason series of his career. Give us a sense of what it was like for the guys last night. I mean, this is a team that obviously has high expectations. You close out a series. What was the mood like in the locker room?
You know, before the game, everything was good. You know, we were relaxed, I think confident. You know, we knew what we needed to do, and really that was come out and play with pace, really try to kind of hit them early. And we did. We came out and played well, and everybody was excited. But, you know, for the most part, I think everybody felt like, hey, we did what we're supposed to do. You know, this team, Portland, you know, they, you know, they did, they had a lot of injuries. Of course, Roy wasn't at 100%. You know, we had the advantage, and but you know, that place is tough to play. You know, Portland is very loud. They play well at home, and you know, it wasn't pretty, but we got the job done, and now we can rest up and get ready for the Spurs on Monday.
Well, and with that, what is your initial thought on this matchup with the Spurs?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we're excited. You know, I mean, we played them in the regular season and did fairly well, although we know, you know, the playoffs are a whole different situation. A different kind of game, you know, different matchups, different problems. You know, obviously we'll figure out our game plan, but, you know, we look forward to it. They're definitely a great team. They're well coached. They have a core of guys who've won championships together. So it's not going to be easy, but, you know, we feel good about our chances, and we're just going to take it one game at a time.
And while you shouldn't feel too awful, Grant, I did say you were 50. I was going to say Duncan, I think, is 52. So I was going to say you were younger than him.
Hey, it's all. You can call me 50 anytime you want. It's all.
Because you're still playing, right?
I tell you what, go win a championship and then come back and host with us again in June, all right?
All right, sounds good. You guys take care, all right?
Thanks, Grant. Thanks for calling. That's Grant Hill on the phone. Yeah, just think about that. It's Phoenix is, what, 2 hours? So, I mean, it's after 4 o'clock in the morning when they land there.
Back, wow,
I mean, sometimes I think it's hard to remember that that's what these guys do. You know, everyone went to watch that game last night, go to sleep, be waking up. He just landed in Phoenix. But nice of him to put us on. And nice of you to be making a snide joke at his expense while he's listening.
What?
One of the nice and classy guys in all of sports.
You think you can slide in the snide joke early on? It just goes to show you got to always be on your toes.
Everybody's listening.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
With all the talk about them expanding the tournament to 96 games, when I heard they're going to 68, my reaction was, wow, that's great news. I think that is terrific news.
It's great because they're not going to 96.
Because they're not going to 96.
Right.
Now, the truth is, I don't want them to go to 68.
Well,
I want them to go backwards from 65 to 64. But I think that I am so relieved that they didn't go to 96 that I actually almost applauded when I heard that they decided to go to 68.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The lesser of two evils, the way lesser of two evils. You know, 68, 65, it doesn't matter to me. You're just adding a few more days or a few more games on Tuesday. To me, the important thing is here, what are the games, what kind of matchups are you going to have on that Tuesday in those four games? What are they going to be? You know, this year the play-in game was Arkansas, Pine Bluff, and Winthrop. Are you getting other games just like that? Well, then it really is doing us no good to add those teams.
Right, exactly. So what are they doing? Are they having play-in games involving 16 seeds? Are they having play-in games involving at-large teams, which would be a whole lot more interesting? Are they giving one seeds a bye, which I think would be a major, a very questionable way to go? Our college basketball insider, Andy Katz, jumps on here on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline flying by. Andy, what do we know? We know they're going to go to 68. What do we know about how they're going to do it?
Well, we don't know yet how that's going to play out. But I can tell you that initially, when all this talk began, you know, even a couple of years ago when they talked about sort of some sort of minor expansion before 96 ever came into play, the talk was to protect those number one seeds even more and to get more at-large teams in for the Power Six conferences and to basically have four opening round games to basically play into those 16 seeds with automatic qualifiers from those low major conferences. Now, the reason I do think things have changed are because of the, you know, massive new television deal between CBS and Turner. And if you're going to do, as you just mentioned, a opening round on Tuesday, and it's all teams, no offense, but like Arkansas Pine Bluff, it's not going to rate. It's not what Turner signed on for, even though it's only one day. I do think there would be some pressure to put together something that gives you a splash, because the reality is that mainstream America would essentially wait for the tournament to start until Thursday when the, quote, you know, real teams began. And that's why I think there's going to have to be some sort of bubble, you know, sort of bubble Tuesday to sort of play your way in. And you know what? If anyone complains that those teams had to play an extra game, or it's not fair that, you know, the seventh place team from the Big East, you know, had to play an extra game and the winner of the SWAC did not, well, the reality is you should be lucky you're even in the field, because a year ago you wouldn't have been.
The new deal that Andy was talking about, it's a 14-year, $10.8 billion, that's billion with a B, deal that was done with CBS and Turner. So based off of, say, this past year's tournament, what do you think would work? Is it the last, you know, four teams that were out, last eight teams out? Who should play in these games? Can you, based off of the tournament this past year, what would have been some good matchups?
Well, think about it. If you had Virginia Tech versus Mississippi State, for example, for the 12th seed, a 12th seed, you know, that certainly would be, you know, a quality game that would draw interest on a Tuesday. And even though, you know, this bubble team that would be on the fringe may, you know, not make it to, you know, the sort of regular part of the tournament, you know, that's the sort of the consequence of expanding the field to this degree. And I don't think there's any problem with that. If you have, you know, the winner of the SWAC and the winner of the Southland and the winner of the NEC and all those leagues that are sort of just jumbled together and played on a Tuesday, I just don't see how there would be that much interest. Now, it would be a lot easier for the selection committee if you put all those AQs against each other on that Tuesday just to fill in the 16s. Because if you did do, as I'm talking about, having the bubble teams play for, let's say, the 12, you'd have to change some of the principles of their bracketing, because you may be slotting it, you know, the winner may be into that 12 spot. You'd have to make sure, obviously, that they're not playing the 5 from one of their same conferences, and you'd have to eliminate, obviously, an either-or because you'd have two teams playing from two different conferences. So you'd have to tweak how they would do that, but they knew they were going to have to do that anyway in terms of changing the bracketing. I think that people will be deflated if they come back at their meetings in 2 months and say, you know what, yeah, we went to 68, and we're piling in more Power 6 teams, more like, they're not going to say that part, but that the opening round games are going to be, you know, the lowest 8 automatic qualifiers. I just think people are going to sort of deflate if that's what they come out with.
I totally agree, and it leaves one really big question on the table. Can you hang on, Andy?
Yeah, of course.
Hang on a second. We'll take a short break here. We'll come back. There's one more very big problem that we haven't addressed yet that this will create, and I'm curious to see what Andy thinks will be done about that. We'll ask him that question next. Mike in the morning.
Sports Center in 1 minute on ESPN.
Andy Katz is with us here as we have but one more thought to bring you on Mike and Mike in the Morning about this expansion of the NCAA tournament. Andy Katz, our college basketball insider. It is official. They're going to go to 68 teams in the tournament. What's not clear is how they're going to do it. Are they going to have a bunch of play-in games for 16 seeds on the Tuesday? Are they going to have them in some sort of bracket-busting, bubble-busting, you know, competition for 12 seeds on Tuesday, or is there another way? Andy, let me ask you a question that we didn't get to a moment ago, and that is, I think overwhelmingly the most significant reason why the NCAA tournament has grown in stature the way it has...
Sheet of integrity!
...is because of these bracket sheets. And so my question to you would be, how much will they have to take that into consideration? If you are going to play games on Tuesday that really matter, not 16-seed games, but games that matter... People won't be able to fill out their brackets until Wednesday. And I think that could change the dynamic completely. How much are they thinking about that?
That's a good question. You know, you'd have to obviously fill them out Sunday night and Monday if they were teams of significance rather than just, you know, whoever wins the 16.
And you could include those four games on it. What you're saying is you would then include those four games on the bracket.
You'd have to. I mean, they would be, you know, sort of, if you can visualize your bracket, you know, a little bracket off of a 12, let's say hypothetically, in the four regions. I also think, no offense to those in Dayton, but if you did do it the way I'd like to see it done, where you have the four bubble games, you'd have to probably do those in the site,
right,
or at the site of where that team would feed to, wherever it is, Buffalo, Providence. I just don't think you could have everything in Dayton and then take those teams and move them if they were at that, you know, higher level. I think they'd be complaining about that. If they were the 16 teams, the 16 seed teams, then, you know, maybe they do all the games in Dayton or all the games in Indianapolis for no other reason than they're just not going to treat them the same. But, you know, the beauty of keeping it at 68 is you still can keep it on one sheet. If it were 96, even though you technically could keep it on one sheet. The print would be a lot smaller. I think it'd be much harder for a goalie to see. And, you know, you'd more than likely have more chances for him to sort of, you know, perhaps lose the bet to you. He'd probably have to go into the bifocal realm of his life if they were in a much smaller font.
Oh, believe me, he's got them. Golic, wear your glasses. Come on, put them on. Everyone wants to see with your glasses. Golic, it is a professorial look. Every now and again, it always, all of us on the staff, it strikes us funny that Golic will pop on a pair of reading glasses every now and again.
Yeah.
I would love to see. He's got them on right now. How would you describe the look, fellas? Who does he look like with the glasses on? It's sort of a, I don't even know who to compare it to. You look like an English teacher if an English teacher, you know, was 6'5", 300 pounds.
I look smart, though, do I not?
Well, you look smarter. You look smarter.
All right, I can go with that.
Andy Katz, thank you for your insight. We appreciate it. We'll check in with you soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Andy Katz, I don't like it. I mean, I don't like either way, I don't like it. I don't like the idea of having to make a little bracket off of your 12 seeds. But I like that better than having four 16-seed playing games.
You got to make a little bracket. We'll all do it. We'll all be able to do it because we love, as long as you can do it, still hand in your bracket sheet, you know, in a reasonable amount of time, believe me, I'm one of these guys. I'm a 20 bracket sheet filler outer guy, okay?
Right.
So that's okay by me.
Yes.
I'll still be able to do this.
You know what bothers me too? Because at the same time I'm saying that, I'll tell you what I like less. What I like less is the idea that it would be a bunch of 16 seed play-in games. You know what? That's just not right. In my opinion, even if there are four of those games, I've been saying this since they went to this 65th team, those kids didn't play in the NCAA tournament. They didn't. The NCAA tournament starts on Thursday. Now, if you played four, I hate to keep using this term, but legit games, you know, like you know, bubble-busting games on Tuesday, then the tournament would start on Tuesday. But if you play four 16-seed games on Tuesday, and those just get bracketed in to get just shellacked.
I agree.
By Duke and Kentucky.
Why are you doing it?
Why even doing it?
What's the sense of it?
You know, I can tell you why they're doing it. They're doing it to get four more major conference teams in there.
Yeah.
They're doing it to get whoever got left out this year, Virginia Tech.
Well, then it's different than Arkansas, Pine Bluff, and Winthrop times four.
Right.
I mean, so, yeah.
No, but that's who would be getting in. Right? Those, they're not adding four more small market teams.
Right.
It's just four more of those teams wind up playing the game on Tuesday. What you're adding is Virginia Tech and all those others, and they're going into the regular tournament. Those kids get to play in the tournament.
Right.
Those schools get to play in the tournament. It's the automatic qualifiers that would suffer because you wanted to give more bids to the Big East, to the Big 12, and the SEC. And I don't like that at all. There's something about that that would really rub me the wrong way. It's not the right way to do it.
Yeah.
It's not the right message to send.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
Who's the best? That we've gotten into this conversation about best players ever without a ring. It stems from Dirk Nowitzki and the Mavericks falling short again. It leads to will Nowitzki opt out of his contract this summer? And if so, where does he go in the pecking order of great free agents? Let's bring in our buddy Ryan Russillo, who's in our studio. You know Ryan from the Scott Van Pelt Show here on ESPN Radio, hosts the NBA podcast for ESPN Radio and so much more. And so let's dig in with this, Ryan. First off, we just got into this conversation about greatest players without a ring. So we'll let you weigh in. If we're putting together the starting five of all-time great NBA players without a ring, it looks like Patrick Ewing is the starting center, right? There's no debate.
Yeah, there. It was tough because when you were talking about it, I was trying to think of somebody better. But you're right. Most of the great centers, especially growing up, like you had to have one of those guys to get a ring, and most of them ended up with one, you know?
So there's no one there.
All right, so the forward is the position.
Forward.
This is easy.
Elgin Baylor, Karl Malone, Charles Barkley.
Malone's out.
Malone's out.
I think Karl Malone's one of the most overrated players in NBA history because people want to put him down as one of the greatest. You look at the scoring numbers. I'm not even talking about coming short in the playoffs. And you can say that I'm just a young guy not appreciating him. Bob Ryan, our good friend, agrees with me 100%. We've had this conversation. He thinks there's 10 power forwards that were better than Karl Malone in NBA history. But if you have the all-time assist guy passing to you on the first option for 15 years, you're going to put up numbers. I think you keep Barkley on that list and Elgin Baylor, because when you start going back and looking at his numbers, I think younger listeners and viewers would be shocked.
All right, now let me just throw a contrary thought at that, which is you can say Karl Malone scored all those points because John Stockton was throwing him the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You could also say John Stockton is the all-time assist leader because he was throwing the ball to Karl Malone, couldn't you?
You could, but I think Stockton was a more well-rounded. Like, I have a... If I had a bet on Karl Malone putting up those numbers without Stockton or Stockton passing to other teammates and still putting up huge assist numbers, I bet on Stockton being able to do that.
Okay, if all only right. because we needed something to break the tie, I'll live with that. Wow. And then let's go to the backcourt. Your point guard options.
You got four, right?
All-time great without a ring. Stockton.
Stockton, Kidd, Iverson, Nash.
Well, Iverson's out because that means you're going to lose whatever game you're going to play. You're going to get a ton of game, you're going to get a ton of points from him, but you're probably going to go out in the first round of the playoffs. Nash, Stockton. Now, as I sit here and pump up Stockton because of just how great he was at the pick and roll, I'm going to go with a more complete guy in Nash because when he plays the game, and it's ironic, he had probably one of his worst playoff games he's ever had last night. But when he's in the game, he dictates the tempo, the style of play, maybe more than any player we've ever seen. I'm not talking about a big man who changes things defensively, but when he's out there for 30 minutes, the game is just different. And then on top of that, it seems like anytime he wants to shoot, he's going to make the shot. He hit that three last night after having a terrible first three quarters. You feel like he could always do that if he wanted to. I think Nash is going to go down, especially, you know, it's going to be tough if he doesn't get a ring. But if you look back at what he's been able to do, historically, he'll be a top five point guard.
Outstanding.
And trying to get off this list of whoever won
the ring. And has a chance to do it now. Yeah. And then, of course, you've got your two guard options, which is probably the least compelling. You have George Gervin, you have Reggie Miller, Sidney Moncrief. I think it's really going to come down to either Reggie Miller or George Gervin.
I like Golic's idea. Move Dominique to the
two.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. Could you shift him around?
Some length in the backcourt there. Sidney Moncrief won't be on there. Terrific player for his era.
Yeah,
he's not
was great
exactly
player.
Somebody that carries over.
Right.
Reggie, I'll give it to him just because of the playoffs, and because we did an hour and a half documentary on him. We'll keep his name out there.
Fair enough. All right, Ryan
hurts you a little.
Ryan Rosillo is with us. So let's go back to where this conversation began, and it was about Dirk Nowitzki. Great player, revolutionary kind of player in that he changes the game with his athleticism at his size. They've won 50 games 10 years in a row, but still no rings. He can opt out of his contract if he chooses to this summer. What are your thoughts?
It's so easy outside of the moment to say, well, that would never happen. Like, I think right now, LeBron, well, can he really leave Cleveland? That'll never happen. In Boston, you have Paul Pierce, who's owed $22 million. He could opt out and become a free agent. You go, that would never happen. But when you look at last night and you think of what's actually going on emotionally in the moment, you start to become open to the idea that he could be, at 32 this June, decide, maybe I need to go somewhere else, and maybe I'll get a five-year deal. Now, I think here in Dallas, Cuban will pay Dirk the six-year max contract just to keep him there. I don't know if that would happen for Pierce in Boston. So I would still bet on him staying with Dallas. But when the loss is so disappointing, this is the first number two seed to lose to a seven since they expanded to seven games in the first round since 2003. So even though it's only 55 and 50 wins between Dallas and San Antonio, this loss wasn't supposed to happen. They were geared up. They could have come out of the West. They lose in the first round. It feels a little different, but I still bet on him returning.
So if he does return, how much will their style of play have to change for them to get to the top of the mountain?
You know, I don't think there was really that much wrong with him at the end of the regular season. Like, people want to beat up on the Butler and Haywood trades. You know, that was a ripoff of a deal. That's a no-brainer. And if Cuban wants to pay the luxury tax, you go ahead and make those moves. I think the biggest problem you had in this series was Kidd was a no-show, Terry was a no-show, Sean Marion a no-show. The substitution patterns were erratic. I give Carlisle credit for trying to do something different. But Dirk is still your star guy. So unless you're going to go away from him, I don't know how much you're really going to change.
But they've done this, and it hasn't worked. I mean, Cuban wants to win,
sure.
And they're getting close. And this style of jump shooting, no defense, and no big men hasn't been working. So does something have to give here?
But it's just so hard. Like, I don't think people truly appreciate how hard it is to change your roster in the NBA. The trade restrictions are all financial, and usually it's a salary dump and has nothing to do with talent. Free agency, rarely do you have this many teams with cap room, which is going to be a whole other story this summer. You come up with it maybe significant cap room once every 5 to 7 years. So you basically have to luck out in the draft. So unless you're going to get this impact guy to put next to Dirk, who's a 1 and a 1A, they've never really had that there. And that's why I think that they've always come up short. Granted, these runs have been really disappointing. They should have gone further more years than they have. But I just don't know that they can say, well, we're going to revamp the entire thing and then expect to win 55 games again next season.
Mike and Mike, Ryan Rosillo's in our studio with us. You know him from Scott Van Pee Show on ESPN Radio, does the NBA podcast for us here at ESPN, and much more. Okay, let's spend another moment on the free agents, then we'll start looking ahead to some of the games tonight and the playoff pictures. LeBron, Wade, Joe Johnson, Chris Bosh. Those are the four big names.
Mm-hmm.
In no particular order, predictions. What do you expect?
Predictions today. LeBron stays. Wade stays. I believe Amari will stay as Phoenix. I think Phoenix just goes, we can't get rid of another guy here, especially as they've eliminated Portland last night. I think Joe Johnson, Atlanta wants to do everything they can to keep him. I think Bosch is the one sign and trade guy. I thought for a long time we were almost unfair, just assuming, well, he's up in Toronto. There's no way that he's going to want to play there for that long. I think this last year was really frustrating. Like, they put together this team that was supposed to score. They couldn't defend anybody. And if he sticks around, that's essentially the group that they're going to have. I could expect them doing a sign and trade to help them a little bit, but those sign and trades are generally ripoffs. Like, you're not going to get Chris Bosch talent back. That might be the one piece that everybody's going to be going after. And if it's in a sign and trade, like a team like the Knicks, what are they going to trade back? So it actually makes more sense for a team like a Houston, perhaps, or a Chicago that has some talent and maybe not the cap room of a Miami or a New York or New Jersey, one of those teams that can send something back. So I think that's the one guy that I feel a little bit better about. Boozer's the other one, maybe to Miami if Utah doesn't want to give him a six-year deal.
Do you think Wade is staying because he just wants to stay there, or he's going to need to see what kind of changes are going to be done?
Well, he's a little different. He's going to be 29 next January. So if he can get like a 5 to 6 year deal, I think he's going to go ahead and take that because, you know, basically there's not going to be enough players to go around the premier guys, so everyone's going to get maxed out and there'll be a lot of guys that are overpaid. But if Miami strikes out, if all they can add is Boozer and, say, a Ray Allen, then will that be enough to keep him there? I don't think it's anything more than the city that, you know, it's where he came up. They're going to give him a six-year deal there. But does he really want to go back to Chicago? I know it's his hometown. It would make the most sense from a basketball standpoint. But I look at it today and think that they're going to talk him into keeping him there because he's the recruiting tool to get anybody else to go there.
Quickly on this, and then we'll turn our attention to the games. The Bulls have a big decision to make before anything else. It's a foregone conclusion. We all think they're going to fire the coach, Vinny Del Negro.
Yeah.
You got to bring in a guy who can be a recruiter as much as a coach. Who is the coach who's out there that most of these maxed out type players would like to play for?
Wow.
Who's appealing? I'll give you a minute to think about it.
Okay.
Take a short timeout. He'll answer that, and we'll look ahead to the 3 Game 6s tonight. Ryan Russillo's in our studio. Mike and Mike in the morning.
ESPN Radio.
We're looking ahead with Ryan Russillo in a moment. Ryan's in our studio, co-host of the Scott Van Pelt Show here on ESPN Radio. He's with us on Mike and Mike. But before we get to that, I mentioned the Bulls will really sort of throw the first stone. What? That's not the expression I'm looking for.
The first stone?
What will they do?
They'll do I don't really know.
They will strike the first blow.
Sounds good.
Their irons in the fire first? Well, I don't know.
They'll do something
their
before everyone else.
Backs against the wall?
They will make the first move in this free agent summer by assuming firing their current coach and hiring a new coach, because they're one of the teams that we figure to be out there trying to get one of these big players, and you've got to believe who they hire as coach will play a significant role in their attractiveness.
Or it could play into, hey, who do you want to have coach you?
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, call up LeBron. I mean, have someone say to LeBron James, hey, who do you want to coach you? We'll get him. Hey, go for Coach K, you know, $20 million a year. So the question is, who do they get that becomes an attractive guy for the big-name free agents?
Well, unfortunately, it seems like I'm talking about every one of our coworkers here, the available big names. And I know Mark Jackson has wanted to coach for a while and is a lifelong St. John's fan. I love the guy, but I think there's going to be an experience thing there that you're not going to have the same situation where Vinny Del Negro didn't have the experience. I have a hard time believing they'd make that kind of hire 2 years in a row. Byron Scott, he's got some things out there that people wonder how much he's into the day-to-day grind of it. You know, is he a guy that can lead because he used to be a former player? So I don't know if that's the fit. Avery Johnson is real tough on his point guards, which can be a good thing and a bad thing. But when you're looking at Chicago, their best player is their point guard, Derrick Rose. The guy's going to be top five. He isn't right now, probably next season. I think Jeff Van Gundy gives you the best balance of a credible resume, somebody who's going to get your team to play some defense. And there's enough name there that you're going to feel like this guy's won wherever else he's been. The New York situation, I thought he did a great job. Houston was a little difficult because I think he kind of doubted a new style general manager in Daryl Morey, so it wasn't going to work because he's like, who's this guy? I never played. So that was obviously an expected divorce. I think Van Gundy's the best name of the available guys that are floated out there.
All right, let's go on to the court. 3 games tonight, and let's start with the Lakers playing against the Thunder. Lakers trying to close them out. With the Lakers so far, is there a chink in their armor, or is it their own mental capacity at times of want to out there?
The biggest problem I have with the way the series has played out is they have Andrew Bynum, Pau Gasol, and Lamar Odom sometimes. They want to put him in power forward going up against Nick Collison, Serge Ibaka, and Nenad Kristic. That's advantage Lakers. And we saw that in the beginning of Game 5. The Lakers had 8 putbacks, layups or dunks, right at the rim, 16 points in the first quarter, because their bigs are just that much better than Oklahoma City's. And there never should have been a Saturday night Game 4 where Oklahoma City blows this team out. I mean, if this is the defending champs, if this is the team that's supposed to come out of the West, Game 4s like that don't happen. So they came back and played tough in Game 3. Obviously, with Kobe on Russell Westbrook, that gives you more defensively. I'm curious to see if they'll go with that tonight in Game 6. But I think the Lakers can win this game on the road, especially if their bigs play like they did this past week.
You'll see that tonight on ESPN. All the games are on ESPN or ESPN2 tonight. The other two are home teams trying to close it out in Game 6. In the West, you have Utah trying to close out Denver. I will always believe the Nuggets would have been in a completely different position right now if George Karl were healthy. And this is obviously
basically a 500 team.
The
now.
Least significant part of the situation with Karl
sure.
is the fact that his team is falling apart. But I do think they're falling apart, at least in part, because he's not there. Do you expect Utah to close them out tonight?
Absolutely. And now, when you look at this, this series has been about injuries. Now, no Kirilenko to guard Melo, so some people seem to like Denver. And then they lose Memo Okor with the Achilles. So now you're saying, wait a minute, you're going to go Boozer center, Millsap, Kirill Fasenko, which is somebody you have to go and look up to remind yourself this guy's playing 20 minutes a night in the playoffs. But now with Nene's knee injury, he's a big that probably moves as well as any guy his size in the league, but he never seems to give you the points that you would expect. You're going to go win in Utah now, a Denver team that, like I said, has been 500 under Dantley. They lose it mentally sometimes. They make some dumb mistakes. They have defensive lapses. They're not going to win this game on the road.
All right, so what does it say about them overall? This is the team that through most of the season, that everybody said, this is the team that's going to challenge the Lakers out of the West. And now they just seem to have mentally fallen apart.
I feel like once March rolled around, though, I didn't look at them that way anymore. And I'd be honest, last year was a bit of a surprise for me. I think they played better than I expected them to against the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. But this will be an easy let's go back to the drawing board because a lot of their guys are under contract. They're going to hope, obviously, a lot has to go right for George Karl to come back. I don't think there'll be monumental changes with this team this offseason.
Mike and Mike, Ryan Russillo is with us, does our NBA podcast and an NBA draft blog that you can find on ESPN.com. Then there's Atlanta-Milwaukee, which has been a very tough series. I don't know how closely people are following it. That game will be on ESPN tonight. Atlanta won the first two games of this series and just looked like they were ready to cruise. Milwaukee won a game and you figured, okay, good for them. They got a win and it'll end in 5. Well, now it may end in 6 and go in the other direction after Milwaukee won in Atlanta, coming from way behind to win that game. I have been very surprised by this series.
This is as big of a surprise as you're going to see. That Game 5 win at Atlanta. After Atlanta was a no-show in Game 3, Game 4 wasn't as bad as the first half in Game 3, but you're thinking, okay, here we go, the Atlanta Hawks. This is a 53-win team. Like, nobody started the season thinking the Hawks would be among the Elite 3 or the Elite 4 with Boston, Orlando, and Cleveland, and they end up as the number 3 seed. They've been the healthiest team all season, so they have all their guys. No Bogut, nobody expects Milwaukee to do anything, and then for them to lose Game 5, and in the fashion they do, by getting outscored down the stretch, a 14-0 run, that's just embarrassing. And one of the biggest problems with the Hawks this season has been the lack of a leader to kind of pull everyone together and say, we need to turn things around. And no one was able to do that for him. Joe Johnson fouls out. They get real stagnant offensively. Credit Brandon Jennings, a rookie who last season, when he was playing overseas, was left off of his Italian team's playoff roster. Think about that. Was left off the playoff roster overseas and is basically single-handedly leading his team to a series lead. I can't believe I'm going to pick against Atlanta because the talent, this isn't even close when you're looking at the talent on paper, but Milwaukee showed us that they can be tough all the time, so Game 6.
And the winner of this team doesn't really get talked about because of the big three in front of them. We get to start the second round on Saturday, which is stunning. Normally, I would have thought it would have been like 3 weeks from now.
Yeah.
We would start the second
finally
round
here
of the NBA playoffs. But Boston's at Cleveland on Saturday. What do you think of that series?
Boston, everybody likes them now, right? They look great.
Boy, everybody has just jumped on their bandwagon, haven't they?
I don't get it. I mean, I watch Boston a lot closer. Obviously, I cover them on television for a long time up in that city, and they've been a 500 team for a long time. Miami Heat, they were a perfect matchup for Boston. One really good player surrounded by a bunch of guys most likely to make mistakes. So they hold Miami to under 80 points per game in that first round. Everybody's excited about Boston again. Ray's hitting some shots. People thinking KG's moving better. I don't see it. I mean, I guess every team has a chance, and you never want to bet against a team that has veterans that have been there before and won before. But if Boston wins this series against Cleveland, I'll be as surprised about anything I've seen this year.
Interesting. And then the other one, the matchup set last night with San Antonio and Phoenix, teams that know each other well, an interesting playoff history. Certainly the very controversial thing with the guys coming off the bench a couple of years ago. How do you see that series?
If Robin Lopez was back and healthy, because he's a great defensive pairing with Amari Stoudemire for Phoenix up front, but I don't think that's going to happen. He worked out yesterday before Game 6 against Portland. He has this herniated disc in his back, and it's just not getting any better. And because of that, you know, San Antonio, it worked this year. They didn't care about being the seventh seed. They cared about being healthy and ready to go. They're going to have 3 days off before Duncan has to go again. I think San Antonio wins this despite not having home court.
Oh, great stuff. Yeah. And whoever would have thought we'd say the key to an NBA playoff series is the health of Robin Lopez. It's a conversation I never thought I'd find myself in.
He was real good this year.
You'll see, you will hear and see Ryan Russillo with Scott Van Pelt this afternoon. And don't miss his NBA draft blog on ESPN.com. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks a lot.